Delighted to say, it's that time of the week when we welcome Keane Manning back into studio. Good to see you, Keane.
Thanks for having me again.
I'm intrigued by the title of your next tale to tell on our history expedition through some creepy, spooky times, let me tell you. A Waterford Changeling. And the whole concept of changeling was something that was always associated with the likes of the fairies in Ireland.
I find with this one, and of the couple of stories we have done, that this one is sort of reality being far more terrifying than anyone's nightmares.
Tell me more.
Which is very cheerful. It's what you want to hear in the morning.
Indeed.
But this one, we're going back again to the 19th century, and we're going to December 1880.
Okay.
And there is news that a 13-year-old by the name of Maria Wall had been kidnapped from Monstravenan in County Kildare. Now,
Do we know why?
You could say that is a long way from Waterford. She is kidnapped by a woman called Mrs. Mary Ann Walsh, who's from Waterford, and she claims that Maria Wall, the 13-year-old, is her child.
Wow.
She details that she has been searching for her child for 4 years. So obviously it makes you wonder what had happened in the first place. So we know that Walsh was a widow of a Protestant soldier, had a very large family, which again wouldn't have been
uncommon at the time.
And she had a daughter, Emily, born in 1870. Sadly, Emily's father and Mary Ann's husband die. So obviously we're looking at a woman struggling when the primary breadwinner has...
Indeed. On her own in the world, essentially.
With no safety net.
Yeah, no welfare, no nothing.
So she takes the unbelievably difficult decision to give Emily to Mrs. Mackesy in Dunmore, who subsequently sends Emily to the Cara Orphanage in County Kildare.
As a babe in arms.
Yeah, just a young, young child. Wow. And if people are familiar with the Cara Orphanage, they probably know already where this is leading to.
I don't, no.
It was managed by Reverend Samuel George Cotton. So if you remember that name, I'll fill in the blanks at the end. So while Emily apparently is in the Cara Orphanage, she is then sent to Monstravenan in County Kildare. Going back to the incident that took place, the kidnapping in 1880, Maria Wall denies that Walsh was her mother. Now you could ask, why did she then go with her? But you have to remember, we're looking at a 13-year-old who has obviously endured a difficult upbringing.
To say the least.
Just in shock.
Yeah,
provides little resistance. It's a thing that's brought up in the court case a couple of times afterwards, that why did she not resist? Luckily for Maria Walsh, depending on what version of the story you believe, while in tears, she actually sees her legitimate protector, as they were termed, and Mrs. Mary Rogers exiting the train as she's about to get on. And immediately the police are informed of really a very difficult case to explain. You know, you've one woman claiming this child is hers, while her legitimate protector is saying she is in the care of this woman, Mrs. Rogers. Dublin Even Mail, who report pretty extensively on this case, notes that Walsh, the water woman, produced a document, and it was a warrant from the Queen's Bench empowering her to seize and take possession of the child whenever she found her. So
was this part of the initial agreement or what? Or?
So it appears that Mary Ann Walsh, while trying to track down Emily, has received some form of legal counsel and permission then to try and track her down. Walsh apparently actually went to the Cara Orphanage and asked Reverend Cotton about her child and where her child has gone. Cotton would not provide any information, which is a familiar story in Irish history, unfortunately. The police, after hearing all this information, are pretty satisfied, remarkably. And Walsh and Maria Wall make their way to Waterford aboard the 2:30 p.m. train. Obviously, there is some sort of suspicion about what is going on, because they are followed by a head constable who actually goes all the way to the house in Waterford and sees Maria lying on a sofa. Now, to what gain that is, I don't really know, but it's just a bit of information that is brought up fairly often. A police court is then held in Waterford on the 4th of December. Walsh is brought before the court and charged with forcibly removing the child. Walsh claims the child is her own. It's noted that the Cara Orphanage, there's already suspicions about the conduct and the management of that institution, which she highlights at the police court. Walsh believes, though, sort of the evidence that will clearly show that the girl that is known as Maria Wall is Emily, is that there are markings on the child which would prove that she is hers. For some reason then, Walsh is brought before the Marquess of Drogheda. His lodgekeeper happens to be the husband of Mrs. Rogers. So if you remember, she was the legitimate protector of the child in question. Indeed. There's a deposition from Maria's mother, the child, by the woman by the name Maria Vickers, who noted that the child had never been in the Cara orphanage in the first place, and knows that she was on the list of the Nace Protestant Orphan Society for about 10 years. So Maria Wall, the 13-year-old, is then questioned, and they ask what happened on the day, and she says that...
We'd all like to know.
Yeah, Mary Ann Walsh comes up to her and says, "You're my child, you're coming home with me." And Wall says, "I don't know who you are, I don't know what you're on about." And Wall notes that Mary Ann Walsh responded by saying, "If I thought you were not my daughter, I would cut you through." Now, again, that would be incredibly intimidating for a young person, a young woman to deal with. We have a little bit about Maria Walsh's schooling, and there's also evidence provided by John and Mary Walsh. So these are the siblings of Emily, and they remark about her having a scar under the ear.
Hmm.
And when the authorities go to examine it, there is no scar found. So after lengthy deliberations, the jury decide that Walsh had taken away the child on the belief that she was her daughter and acquitted.
So we're talking maybe psychiatric kind of...
It's sort of...
connotations or...
It's sort of along the lines that she was in the belief that this was her child, but she was mistaken.
Right.
So she's kind of left off. But what is really unsettling then is when we actually learn about the Cara Orphanage. So it was a Church of Ireland operated orphanage by Reverend Cotton. So our story is from 1880, but in 1892 this reverend is actually imprisoned. He's imprisoned firstly for mismanagement of the orphanage, displaying incredible cruelty to the children that were there.
That's turned into a real Dickens novel. Yeah.
But he was also charged with manslaughter and causing death of two children.
Oh my God, really serious charges.
And when we think of how reluctant he was to... probably
help or
reveal
or
help, yeah. That it begs the question of what really did happen to Emily.
Mm.
And I think most people with children and stuff, the thought of that is probably as terrifying as any ghost or supernatural.
Your worst nightmare. Totally
and
utterly.
You know, yeah. And particularly we look at the role of women in society back then, that really from the start of when Mary Ann Walsh's husband dies, she's kind of powerless to societal circumstances and pressures that... sort of, you think you're making one decision for the right reasons, and it just snowballs then.
Oh my God.
And a lot of questions.
So did Cotton do jail time?
Yeah, he did do jail time, yeah. Apparently, it was one of these that he had many sort of misdemeanors from different places, but again, just
a nasty character.
Continued to snowball and stuff. So there's been a lot of work done recently on the Cara Orphanage.
A very sad affair.
A very sad affair, yeah.
My God, God bless them all. Well, Keane Manning, thank you so very much for that.